Okay, I think we're ready to go.
All right.
Okay, Billy, if you'll put up our next slide, emotional sobriety and our next function. So what is that? So a number of years ago, my husband's sponsor was a fellow named Tom I from North Carolina. He's still with us physically, but dementia has robbed him from us. And so we have him in our spirit and in our memory and in our tapes and recordings, and we're so glad to have that. But we truly, truly miss him. And maybe about 15 years ago again or so, I overheard him. You know, some people might call it eavesdropping, but I call it overheard him. It wasn't like it was a private conversation, but I heard him say that, now for years I had thought about steps 10, 11, and 12 in early sobriety. I heard him call the maintenance steps. And that made total sense. You 1 through 9 are kind of the past, and 10 through 12 are keeping you going. And I thought, he said, oh, to me, they're not the maintenance steps. They are the growth steps. Well, that was a new spin on it. Okay. So I thought, well, that's the first time I've heard that. So I went into step 10, and this sentence just like powed me. It says, our next function is to grow. How? In understanding and grow in effectiveness. So I really have taken that to heart. How am I growing in understanding? And I'll give that in sponsorship, or maybe also in effectiveness and sponsorship. It helped me to start making decisions differently. And what I'm going to do, will that have any benefit for anyone else but me? Am I the only person who will get something out of this? Now, as I mentioned before, I love going to the movies. I enjoy my workouts. And yes, those are for me. But crossing that line would be working out 4 to 5 hours a day, going to 2 movies a day. That would cross for me over into the line of extreme selfishness, because obviously nobody but me will benefit. I'm not working out to be in competition. Have no idea. Movies are my 2-hour vacation. I love everything. I love the lighting, the dialogue, the costume, the setting. I love looking at all of the things that people were involved in making happen. It never fails for me to ask myself, how did they do that? How did they film that? My God, I love being removed for that short time, but then I'm obviously back in reality. But it's a refueling station for me, just like for somebody who knits, someone who plays golf, someone who might paint, read. So it's okay to do that on the now and then basis, but it's not going to benefit anybody from me but me. So it's helped me start to make decisions differently. So let's talk about sponsorship, growing in understanding and effectiveness in sponsorship. My first 10 years, I really didn't sponsor many people at all. Between Atlanta and Minneapolis, they're just, I got to say, sponsorship was talked about, but it wasn't like what's your name, rank, and serial number, what's your sobriety date, sponsor, and home group, as I would feel and get in Southern California, which I was really ready for that new launch in that activity and service work and so forth. And so in sponsorship, I started, and as I told you before, I made a decision to start sponsoring the way I wanted to be sponsored, which was someone to walk me through the three legacies. And that's what I do for my sponsees. Once. I don't do it over and over and over. I always feel like if I'm doing it one more time with only you, I should, could, want to be doing it with someone who's never been through it with me. Not that I have some special magical way, but if you want to join in that meeting, fine. But I don't want to regurgitate just with you for you. The way you're going to best be a sponsor or a sponsee is by passing it on. That's how you will enrich your recovery. In the beginning, I know I was, I would call not militant, but highly structured. I wasn't and never have been somebody, okay, you wake up, call me. Okay, go brush your teeth, call me. Then you make your bed, call me. No, I don't typically get that kind of sponsee need, nor do I really have it to give. I give everybody the best I have. I believe I have softened in my sponsorship, but my principles have not changed. That has remained consistent. Respect. If at any time they lose respect for me, I really urge you to go to another sponsor. That in at least 3 meetings a week, we have regular contact. I know exactly how many people I sponsor because we are in communication in some method, typically the phone, every week, unless we make other arrangements or traveling or I'm traveling, but we still have weekly communication in some method. Most all of them have a regular committed call time, so we're not doing the silly phone tag. We have a scheduled time where I'm here, you're there, we connect, and then we go on about our business. I believe in service. I believe in actively supporting your home group, that you have one, that you're willing to sponsor, and if not sponsor, find some way to be useful. You can't be a taker. No, you can't be a taker. I'm good for one relapse, one slip. But if you're a repeat slipper, zero. You're either completely willing or you're not. If you have been round and round and round on this, there's nothing magical I have. I will take you as far as you're willing to go. But if a drink becomes more than your program, okay. This is just me. My time is limited. And I want to just give it to the people who want to take the actions. If you don't, there are no magical words I can say or actions I can do or coddling I am unwilling to do. Understanding, compassion, heartfelt listening, absolutely. But I'm not going to help you decorate the problem. I'm not going to help promote the problem. That is ineffective. I know there's going to be things in somebody's life that are so currently powerful and consuming in every area of their life. And I will passionately and compassionately listen. Maybe I'll ask you if you would like some feedback on that, or maybe not. I do not launch into giving you suggestions that you have not asked for. That proves ineffective. I will listen. Mostly I will ask you questions about this, or have you checked out this, or have you done this? Not give direct suggestions, even though they're good, even though they're spot on. If I'm talking or sharing to a brick wall, it won't matter how good I think they are. So I've grown greatly in sponsorship, continue to grow in sponsorship, but the values of being a member, which is what I'm cultivating, members of Alcoholics Anonymous, not just attenders, not visitors. That's what I'm about. And if that, as a sponsee, is not what you're interested in, that's okay. Someone else would be more suitable. Now, I also wanted, a couple years ago, Kent and I, so there's different, so A started with a lot of middle-aged to older men who had some type of a religious background. Years go by, you know, and we softened on that. We've got as you understand him. And then we've had phases of influence, like the young people's. I was part of that whole young people's that had already started, the treatment wave that came in. Then we had more and more openness about the gay and lesbian community. Our pamphlet's even been expanded, LGBTQ. We've also grown in the Native American communities, or in Canada, First Nation. Our African American communities, more and more we're opening the doors. But there was a door that seemed a little uncomfortable, and that was the atheist and agnostic. And so neither my husband nor I, we've been clear for a very long time of who and what the God of our understanding is, who and what we pray to, how we pray. We are very reliant. We are God reliant, absolutely. We're not church attenders. My husband wasn't raised with the faith. I was. I'm not an active in that. But we're very spiritually grounded in our ways. So we thought, you know, we decided to go to the International Secular Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous in Toronto in 2018. Not because we had questions about our own faith belief or whatever you'd like to define it. It was, how can we best help? How can we grow in understanding and effectiveness for those who either struggle with this or are that are in our rooms? Because many of them, in my conversation with them, are afraid to speak up in what I'll call a mixed meeting. They get the comments like, well, you'll come around. They'll get the comments of, well, keep coming back. God's bound to come to you. While that might have really happened for many people, as I know it has, I've heard your stories. You came in atheist or agnostic, and perhaps an event or a situation that you witnessed or had happened to you made that adjustment, and you crossed the line into to faith or belief in a higher power. But what about the ones that don't? How will I be useful to them? And one of the great gifts in the We Agnostics, there's a line that says something like, don't let any prejudice you have against spiritual terms deter you from asking yourself, and I put the rest of this sentence in a question, what do they really mean to you? And this is not in the book, do you know how you formulated that? Did an event happen to you as a child, perhaps? Was it parental influence? Was there some other outside influence that, you know, do you know where it came from? This is not for judgment. This is not for interrogation. This is not for anything, but when we have so much prejudice blocked up, we can't see. It is a wall that we have put up. So one by one, are you willing to take the brick down and just ask yourself, do you know how you got that? Because perhaps there is a different way. Maybe there isn't for you. It's just not a line you're ever going to cross. I don't know. But again, I had a gal who really, she'd had many good sponsors, and I was just in the rotation, it appeared. And her, I could see how God had worked amazingly in her life. But because she got some, she did not get so many things she wanted, demanded, should have had in her mind. It was like she had this double dog dare you to convince me why I should believe in a God. Well, there are no words. I could talk from then till now. If you're convinced, you will not be convinced, you won't be. There's no trying to put a toothpick through that brick wall. I wasn't going to be able to say anything. None of my actions, if you don't see my actions in my life, I can see them all over in your life. So we went to that to try to have a better understanding and effectiveness on how to work with those who are of agnostic and atheist beliefs. So that, this is some of the way that, again, emotional sobriety worked, in the sense that, well, our way clearly is the only way. No, it's not. So let's go on to the next slide. Emotional sobriety and criticism. Ooh, don't we love that? Boy, this will bring the character out in you. From the AA Service Manual, combined with the 12 Concepts for World Services, page 34, Concept 9. Even though it doesn't mention criticism in here, this is where I get it, this concept. And at the bottom, Bill wrote in The Grapevine in 1959 an essay called Leadership in AA, Ever a Vital Need. Sponsorship is about leadership. Criticism, how you handle it, will be, I think, one of your great character moments of leadership. There are what I call 9 different bullet points in this essay. I'm only going to focus on one of them, and that's criticism. The next slide, please. There are, I think, 3 paragraphs he addresses criticism on. He calls it the acid test. Now, that doesn't mean the LSD test, okay? Done that, didn't have a problem with criticism. Okay, so this is the acid test. He tells us there are the constructive critics, my friends, and then there's the destructive critics. Many times I can be swayed by my friends, but what about the destructive critics? His point, he says twice in the one paragraph, listen carefully. When, I don't know about you, I'm guessing you're probably similar. When you feel attacked or yelled at, or you are waiting for them to maybe take their breath or not to start, you know, get your claws out there. And what about when you, what about how, when you, I remember, you know, you're ready to defend and deflect how they're wrong. You're not going to hear what they say. It says, listen carefully. Is there any truth to what they are saying? That's really hard when you feel like you're being yelled at or embarrassed in public. But if you listen carefully, is there any truth to it? If so, his instruction is, if so, thank them and get on with your own respective inventory. Thank you for telling that. No, that's hard. If not, then I can either ignore what they said, just a bunch of poo, or try to persuade them as to how you see it. Basically, Let me show you how it really is. Let me tell you what really happened, which implies you are wrong. I want you to see it my way. Come over to my side of the fence. However, by failing that, obviously he had tried that before and it didn't work. I need to realize that they are too sick to listen. Those are Bill's words, not mine. Those are Bill's words. And try to forget the whole business. This is a large order, but we must keep trying. Now, if I were to summarize the point on criticism, it would be, can you separate the information from the emotional delivery? Just take that off the table. Could have been said the nicest of ways, the meanest of ways. Just disregard that. Is there any truth to what they said? Sometimes it might be as simple as somebody humbly saying, you know, you're always late. Yeah, I know. But when somebody says, you are always late, do you only think about yourself? Sometimes that's the one that gets ahead of you. That's the one that you hear. Can you set that aside and say, yeah, I didn't like getting called out on what I know to be true. I'm always late. And it is disrespectful to other people. I am imposing on their time when they probably could have been doing something else too. Sometimes only when it's spoken in a louder than kind, sweet voice can I hear it. Now, let me give you an example. One of my dearest, dearest friends asked me some years ago to take her through the traditions. And I agreed to do that. And the design was that she would call me. We had a scheduled time and we would confirm it week to week, just in case I had a speaking thing or she had something. We would confirm it week to week. But it was a standing appointment. Will we see you next week? Yes. Now, I know that her scheduling precision was not my level. I know that. That's okay. But there would be times when I would wait 10 minutes into the call and I would call to see if she was going to be on the call that night, because obviously, what of the many things do I have to do could I do in this 30 minutes of open time besides wait for her call? So I would call and I would hear, oh, she's sleeping. She didn't bother to tell me she was not feeling well. She left it for her boyfriend to say that. Oh, she's speaking tonight. Well, again, I look at that as a standing commitment we have. If you need to change it, fine, but have the courtesy to please tell me. And I asked her, please don't leave that for your boyfriend to do because I happened to call. I would appreciate you taking responsibility for the commitment you've asked to make and calling me in advance. Okay, no problem. I'll do that. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it wasn't meant to be, I'm right. It was meant to, please take responsibility for this commitment. And one day, again, 10 minutes into the call, I haven't heard from her. It was all set up for this week. I call, I find out, oh, we're having a birthday party for my boyfriend. I said, well, I thought this was on your calendar. We confirmed last week. Do you not like check your calendar? That launched her big time. Boom. I tell you, she unleashed opinions about me. She took my inventory upside, downside, spun it around and hit the back. You this, you that, you think you're this, you think you're that, and blah, 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 blah. And I mean, I am stunned, frozen. I'm listening as intently as I can, trying to think, what is she saying? I said, well, thanks for sharing that. Oh, don't get snotty with me, and launched out in another 5 minutes. When there was a pause, I said, are you done? Yes. It's time for me to hang out now. Thank you. Good night. Because there wasn't anything that was going to come out of my mouth that was going to be good. I went to my computer, opened up a Word document. I typed out as best as I could remember what she said. Because I knew if I don't dump this bunch of crappy emotions out somewhere safely, appropriately, I will not sleep for nights. I know that because it's going to do the crazy eight in my head over and over and over. It was 2 days before I even told my husband about this conversation. I didn't want to throw her under the bus. I tried to look at the information and disregard the harmful, hurtful delivery. I said, do you see me doing any of these things? And trust me, I trust him to say, well, you know, well, you're getting a little this, or you're getting a little big for your britches, or whatever it might be. To confirm that, I know he wouldn't say, oh, no, honey, that doesn't make you look fat. You know those questions that we ask. So I said, do you see any truth in this? Really, tell me the truth. And I talked to my sponsor about it. And again, I'm not looking for, oh, you're so wonderful. I'm looking, is there something I am or am not doing that would cause her to say something like that? And my husband, in more than one case, has said, when this has happened to me, it's jealousy. It's just jealousy. And I never think about how jealousy on their part would come out at me. About a couple, 3 weeks later, I get a call. I wasn't available to take the call. And there was a message, I'm sorry. You know, I just, families do stuff like that and then they get over it. And I thought, oh, well, that's, I don't know if that was supposed to be an amends. But I got to tell you, that was a pretty crappy one. It would be 13 months after that conversation. While we would communicate, it was different. It was very, very topical. I never mentioned anything about me. When she would say, well, so what's going on? You're always busy. Tell me about you. That was the end of me, because from her inventory, I always blah, 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 blah. I'm going here, I'm going here, I'm doing this, doing that. Didn't think I was, but I'm certainly not going to give up anything now. 13 months go by. And we had an opportunity to do one a favorite thing that we always did. And after it was over, and it was always very fine and kind, but I knew that night I was like in the spiritual zone. I was so emotionally sober and comfortable with me and what I wanted to share with her that the time seemed right. And I asked her, and it was late at night, and I said, do you have a little time? I'd like to share something with you. Now, let me give you a little tip. The word talk, can I talk to you, is a conversation killer. It will kill it before it starts. Eliminate the word talk unless it's a post reference from your life. Biggest gift I can give you, I think. Because if you've ever said, can I talk to you? Even if it's something nice, you're like, oh, what I do. It's just that it kills it. You're on the defense before you've even sat down. So I use things like, I'd like to share something with you. I'd like your opinion on something. I'd like your take on something. I'd like to review something with you. Then you come to the table as equals. Talk is off balance. It doesn't matter. Even if it's good stuff, make it even. So she said, sure. So I said, about 13 months ago, I don't know if you remember that conversation or not. And she said that, yes, I do. Now, thank you, God, that she did, because it could have gone in a funny way. And I said, I've thought an awful lot about what you said. And I wrote it down so I could remember it, because I wanted to share with you each of those points of how I review those today. We talked for about an hour and a half. Again, talk is in the past tense. And I knew going into the conversation, she may or may not choose to stay in the friendship with me. And I knew going into the conversation, I was going to care and love her whether she did or not. She could not take that away from me. She may not respond to it, but she couldn't take that heart away from me. That enabled us to resume even better a very, very deep, special friendship, soulship, whatever we want to call it. But I could have ruined that by, I wanted absolutely to get in the game on this and get it straightened out. I don't want to be uncomfortable in a friendship that meant a great deal to me. But I knew it wasn't time until it was time. And then I knew. I told you earlier, I rely so much on those nudges, on those intuitive thoughts that page 86 and 7 guide us to in step 11. And that day finally came. Now, could we have the next slide, please? Criticism has all, I've tried to take it from criticism. Growing emotional sobriety took criticism from being criticism to course correction. It's still a matter of how do I view it? My life has been a series of course corrections. If I said, no, I'm just going this way, well, I'm going to run off a cliff. I'm going to run into the bridge. I'm going down the road of life. It's going to have turns and twists. It's going to have plan Bs. How am I going to navigate those smoothly? That doesn't happen in 24 hours. That's practice. But I'm sharing with you two items that Bill had about criticism that just blow my mind. This first one's a letter that he got from a group in Chicago in 1960. They were taking his inventory. He was 26 years sober at the time. He replied, I'd love to have read the scene what the first letter was, but he says that you seemed disillusioned with me personally, maybe a new and painful experience for you, but many members have had that experience with me. Most of their pain has been caused not only by my several shortcomings, but by their own insistence on placing me, a drunk, trying to get along with other folks, upon a completely illusionary pedestal, a station which no fallible person could possibly occupy. I'm sure that you will understand that I've never been held myself out to anybody as either a saint or a Superman. I've repeatedly and truthfully said that, I lost my place there, that AA is full of people who have made more spiritual progress than I ever have or can make. That in some areas of living, I have made some decided gains, but in others, I seem to have stood still. And in still other ways, I may have gone backwards. I'm sorry that you are disillusioned with me, but I am happy that even I have found a life here. Wow. Thank you for this example of graciously responding to criticism. Now let's look at the next one that I so enjoy as well on that. It's in As Bill Sees It. The next slide, please. on page 326. It's a letter he got in 1955, again, taking his inventory, criticizing him, called Welcome Criticism. Thanks much for your letter of criticism. Wow, that's emotional sobriety. I'm certain that it had it not been for its strong critics, AA would have made slower progress. For myself, I've come to set a high value on the people who have criticized me, whether they have seemed reasonable critics or unreasonable ones. Both have often restrained me from doing much worse than I actually have done. The unreasonable ones have taught me, I hope, a little patience, but the reasonable ones have always done a great job for all of AA and have taught me many a valuable lesson. So criticism has, how do I handle that? People are watching. They always are. Am I handling that with some grace and dignity? Or am I not? I have a chance to grow emotionally in being sober in this area. And our final slide, please. Emotional sobriety in the now. So as we've reviewed many areas of what emotional sobriety has felt like or looked like or how I've begrudgingly gone into it, you know, for one thing, for me, it's about keep growing up. In some areas, I've still got plenty of work to do. I've made a lot of progress. I'm not what I used to be, and I'm not what I'm going to be, hoping to be, wanting to be. It will take effort and some part on mine. And, you know, that's the good news, is there's still a long way to go. And it's about spiritual perfection. Now, this grapevine quote of the day it's been in the grapevine quote of the day for two times that I've seen, possibly more. This was written 7.5 years before I was even born. That's why I also love it. And it's from the book. It's in the story by Our Attitudes in Emotional Sobriety 2. He says, "We who have been helped by AA are as letters of God addressed to our friends and fellow men. By our attitudes, our speech, and our behavior, are we to show them the transforming power of AA's philosophy of life?" So does my family, friends, those around me, workers, co-workers, have they seen change? All through our literature in the big book is about the demonstrations of change. Not about our intentions, but our demonstrations. So I hope that we all feel like a really to whom it may concern letter. You can believe what they say, kind of like what the doctor's opinion has. You can rely on what they say. I hope that we're that letter of that God is proud to send. So with that, I thank you for being here, and I will turn it back over to the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Debbie. Would you like to all unmute yourself and say thank you to Debbie, please?
Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you, Debbie.
That was amazing.
Thank you, Debbie.
So helpful.
Loved it.
Awesome.
Fabulous.
Woo.
Yeah.
Drink up.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks for hanging in the whole time. All right.
Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you for hanging in the whole time.
Anybody
amazing, absolutely amazing.
Anybody wants to talk to Debbie for a minute? Do you have a question?
There were two little chat things. Let me see if any of them is a question. Okay, let's see.
Nope.
I don't think so. Okay. Anybody have any questions? I can.
Yeah, I have a question.
So I have gotten so much out of today, and I appreciate your sense of humor. It helped me to digest a lot of the messages you were sharing. I think it's interesting that today I came upon this, your story. I have 12 years of recovery and have not had the fortune of having a longtime sponsor, which has been kind of a dream of mine. But I think for me, you know, plan B is to have a series of sponsors, which has been wonderful too. My sponsor that I've had the last 4 years, the one before her, passed in sobriety. But I've had her for 4 years, and I've really shown her my authentic self through many, many fifth steps. She's really seen some of my basest character. And I appreciate her for that. She got a new sponsor who is a man, and I had some judgment about that I was working on letting go. And apparently his sponsor was Clancy. He's very old school, and I respect that. She told me that there was going to be an exercise that he had done with her that she was going to do with her sponsees, and she was going to pray to God on my defects of character and make a list, and then I would read it and follow the instructions for how to do a 6 and 7. And I felt really uncomfortable about that. It really didn't feel right. And I thought, you know, maybe I'm not going to participate in this. And then I saw in my yearly astrology, it said somebody very close to you is going to reveal things about yourself. And I thought, okay, God, okay, I got the message. So I finally received it and I read it, and it was scathing. It was true, a lot of them, but it felt kind of traumatic. And I felt so vulnerable that I almost didn't want to leave the house. I felt like I'm a monster, you know? And this is some bedrock, you know, defects, like the ones after 12 years that, yeah, are probably not, maybe not ever go away. I'm powerless over them. My question is, you're talking about criticism and, you know, defects, and I'm getting a little mixed up. I did tell her I was going to take a break. I wasn't honest about how I felt about that experience, but I'm still kind of working through it. And I do wonder, because I don't know a lot of women with a lot of time. You know, I've never seen those instructions in the big book, and it felt like because she prayed on them that they came from her higher power, and it just made it hurt even more in a way. And I felt like I can't go back to this relationship, kind of like the stories you tell. Oh my God, I could listen to you 4 more hours. I swear to God, we've gone so deep here. I've never heard somebody share their story in 4 hours. This is brilliant. But can you speak to that? I'm stuck on that's not in the big book. Therefore, it was wrong, and I don't know that I can accept it.
Sure. So I'm not going to speak to that directly necessarily, Michelle, but what I will say is there are all forms, flavors, shapes, and sizes of sponsorship. I sponsor one way to the gals I sponsor. Many of them follow the same kinds of thinking or flow, but in their own way. There isn't a one way fits everybody, because everyone has their own personality that I take into account. I have people who in their time to chat with me, they may be fill in 5 minutes, but in person they're brrr, I can't shut them up. And then I have the other ones that in their time, they barely take a breath. You know, if I didn't have an ending time, they would be on for the next hour. So I'm mindful in treating everyone the same way. Principles truly before personalities is what I work very hard to practice. I'm also compassionate about the unique things that are going on with each of them and try to adjust accordingly about where they are. Always being a little sensitive and compassionate. how I walk someone through the steps, there's a lot of things a sponsor does or says that cannot be correlated back to the big book. You mentioned about the defects of character. I have a way of doing them. They write down what do they see as their defects of character in step six. And on the opposite side of that same page, I ask them, what do you think is the contrary action? So it's their engagement in their recovery, not me designing their recovery. So that method, so to speak, isn't in the big book, yet it seems to be effective. It sounds like the situation that if we're talking of referencing back to criticism, separate the information from the way it was delivered. I call it the emotional delivery. If we just take a look at the information, is there any truth to it? You indicated there's some. Yeah, there, you know. So while you might not have liked the presentation of it, can you work with, it may not feel like the right place for you to stay. I'm not saying go or staying, say, stay, but this will be something you have to be willing to do. You'll have to do your own examination through your own prayer and meditation time. Maybe talk to someone who's unaffected, who can maybe also give you some guidance on that. So thanks so much for the question.
Thank you, Debbie. And Dora S. from Cape Coral, Florida.
Hi, Dora.
Hey, Debbie. Great talk. You had mentioned there were a few other ways to say, do you have a moment to talk? One was, I'd like to review something with you. What were some of the others?
I'd like your opinion on something.
Okay.
I'd like to share something with you. I'd like to get your take on something, which is kind of the opinion, but I'd like to get your take on it. I'd like to review something with you. You might find some other phrases, but to do anything but use the word talk.
Yeah.
It is just, you just already went downhill before you began.
Yeah. Or even I tried substituting him with chat, but felt that that was the same.
Well, that's a lot better than talk. Can I chat with you about something? That is much better than talk. Even though what we're doing is talking or / communicating, chat is good. That's fine too.
Yeah, but when you review something with someone, or I'd like to get your opinion, you're involving them. They're going to be present. It's so much different than being talked to.
Yeah. Thank you.
Patty, you had a question regarding talk with a longtime friend, Patty from Canada. And if you're not speaking, would you please mind putting it on mute so we don't have to hear?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, this is me. Hi. I really enjoyed your the whole talk. I didn't go through the whole thing. We had to meet some people downstairs, but it came right at the right time. I just came in the door, and I had this text and I've been sober 40 years, would you believe, with this person. She's also been sober 40 years, and we get our medallions together. I have always triggered her. And this conversation we had, again, she loses her temper and says slimy things. And usually it's in person, but this time it was on an email. And I thought, now I even have it in writing. Like she says, when I try to say, look, let's just get over this. Stop your whining, you know, she says to me. I once told that to a therapist, and she said, "Is she your friend?" You know. Anyway, the message on my text when I came in tonight was, I think we should talk. It's the first time in 40 years she's ever wanted to talk with the two of us. And she used that word talk. And when you said it, I think we should talk. Can it be tomorrow morning or Monday morning? Let me know. Just the two of us in person. And then I realized at the end it said, or by phone. And immediately I've got my guard up, my back up, because she usually, I trigger her and she'll, you know, I don't want to meet somebody that's just going to lash out at me and I don't know how to even answer it. What I did say was, I am going to my brother's tomorrow. I just got in. I will text you on Monday morning, because I thought I'll wait and see how I feel. But I'd like to say, can we bring God with us? You know, not just the two of us. Anyway, I would like your advice. Oh, imagine if this goes on forever.
I would reply certainly back to her, thank you for the invitation to get together. I look forward to it. Here's when I'm available. And then when you do get together, before we visit, before we get caught up and have a conversation, let's say the Serenity Prayer, let's bring God into it. Do it there. And then thirdly, try to listen to what she has to say. Maybe this is a friendship that needs revisiting. Maybe it just isn't, it's so topical, it's so yin-yang and seesaw, it's not fulfilling. It's familiar, but it's not fulfilling. Maybe it needs to just be revised, but try to bring solutions to the table. If you know what some of the things are that are consistently, you apparently do that send her in a new direction, is there, you know, I'm sure you certainly wouldn't do anything like that intentionally, but again, I mentioned in the beginning, sometimes, you know, I've got to grow up. I can't be sensitive to every single comment or perceived snub I got to grow up and get some tougher skin and accept that my friend or my husband has these things that can annoy me. But is this something that's worth ending this relationship or not? But not gameplay with it. If I want to come to the table with some solutions.
Thank you, Debbie. Thank you, Pat. Is there anybody else? No? Great. Karen, would you take us out with the Serenity Prayer? Then we're going to close this meeting. Karen, please.
Yep, thank you, Yvonne. So, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. Thanks, Debbie. Thanks, everybody.
Woo, we did it! Thanks, everybody, for being there. Thank you.